Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 131 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today we're going to be talking about the first of the 12 permaculture principles, and that is observe and interact. Now, we're going to go through all 12 principles in this new Monday series, and I suppose it pays at the start just to give a quick overview, but the reason that I'm doing so here is even more purposeful than in any other case, I think, because the 12 permaculture principles all work hand in hand with each other, and they kind of add on top of each other. It's like I often say, a lot of the things that we do here to try and make ourselves more self-sufficient and more sustainable, they kind of compound each other. So when we put something in place, be it eating more seasonally perhaps, then when we put the next step in place to try and reduce our food waste or whatever else it might be, the first thing that we've done compounds that second action and it makes it more impactful and easier. And then when we do the third thing of perhaps we start composting, well, that adds to the first two and the first two feed into the third. So the permaculture principles are very much of that ilk. And if anything, I think they are the most important insofar as acting together as one. Now, I am not a militant permaculturist, far from it, and hopefully, if you're a long-time listener, you'll know that I'm not really a militant anything. I don't believe that there is a one-size-fits-all solution for everyone, but I certainly think that the permaculture principles overall have information and wisdom within them that we can all use. So permaculture was basically brought into the world by a combination of Bill Mollison and David Holmgren, and in the 60s and 70s is when they kind of worked on it most, and in 78 they published their book Permaculture One, which introduced this design system to the general public. But I like to take a much more holistic approach and consider the term permaculture, and it is permanent agriculture. That's what it means. So the whole idea is that we're moving towards a system whereby everything we do is having a permanent effect. So we're talking about, you know, introducing perennials as much as possible and systems whereby the garden weeds and mulches itself, and the idea is that this system would carry on working and acting without us. That's the goal. Now, we're not necessarily going to get there. We're going to be growing annual vegetables and things like that, but the idea being that everything we do is nudging towards that system of perpetual sustainability, that what we're doing is we're trying to create guilds of plants that interact with each other and look after themselves. We're trying to create guilds of not only plants, but of systems, so that our chickens are next to the compost pile and the chicken waste goes straight onto the compost, and then the other side of the chicken house might be our vegetable bed and the waste products from our harvesting go straight to the chickens. And this interaction between everything that just moves us by slowly, slowly nudging towards a sustainable, permanent agriculture. So there are 12 principles, and we're going to be talking today about principle number one, which is observe and interact. So what that means is twofold, really. It means that obviously we're going to be interacting with our environment. So we're going to be making changes. We're going to be planting plants. We're going to be trimming plants, cutting plants. We're going to be adding permanent structures. We're going to be adding and changing where things happen. But we're also going to be observing. We're going to be observing two things. Firstly, what we've done, but I say firstly, secondly, what we've done really, because firstly, we're going to be observing what's already happening. And being observant and responding to everything that we see is one of the most important things towards moving towards a more sustainable way of life and a more ethical way of life. So it's about learning from nature and from other people and from what we see and from our plants and animals, and observing how other people have achieved the results that we're trying to achieve, and how nature itself is already perhaps achieving some of the things that we're trying to achieve, and we might want to learn from it and encourage certain behaviours that we might otherwise have either neglected or not even seen. And observation is so important. And I have done a podcast back along. If you search through the podcast titles, I think it was called A Lockdown Activity for Mental Health. And I've subsequently released a video on YouTube about the importance of doing this as well. And it's about basically sitting down and observing your space and recording what you see. You can find Self-Sufficient Hub content elsewhere online. We have our YouTube channel. We've also got our website, and we also have our Facebook group and page. Links to all of these can be found in the show notes. So why don't you come and check us out? So observation is obviously a key when it comes to permaculture, but we can develop our observational skills, because a lot of what there is to observe, our subconscious is naturally sort of blocking out as irrelevant, because the way we have evolved, you know, it's not relevant for us to notice some of the bugs and things below our feet. It's not relevant for us to notice exactly the pattern of rainfall on your property necessarily, or how the wind interacts with certain plants. And this is something that we can train in ourselves. And by doing so, we're gaining information all the time about how our property works and how our plants are working. And by observing the social patterns that we see in animals and people around us, and also in nature, then we can use them in our designs, in our garden designs, to help them work better. The idea of creating a permaculture design in your garden is that everything works with the minimum of inputs, and inputs include effort, your human effort. So if we design our gardens in such a way that respects our natural tendencies to want to walk in a certain way, then, you know, insofar as navigating around our space, then we're going to be able to reduce the amount of effort involved in tending our garden. And this all relates to the philosophy of work with nature, not against it. So we've got to know how nature works if we want to do that. A quote from Dave Holmgren, one of the creators of the permaculture philosophy, if you like, is that good design depends on a free and harmonious relationship between nature and people, in which careful observation and thoughtful interaction provide the design inspiration. So we're almost always going to be talking about really, really complex systems, because even in a tiny, tiny garden, there's going to be an incredibly diverse variety of natural habitats and nature happening all around us with lots and lots of interactions. So this principle says that we should take quite a cautious approach, really, when we're making these interventions and changing things. We need to really think about it first and observe what's happening and observe the changes that we make and their results, so that that allows us to decide whether we want to carry on making changes, stop, or change the changes that we're making depending on the results, without causing any huge problems. Even failure can be useful as long as we're observing it and gaining that feedback. And that's something I say quite a lot. The learning is really the most important bit. So this principle tells us that permaculture is all about learning. It's about learning and interacting and doing those two things together. So permaculture uses an action learning approach, which works in stages. So the first stage is you identify a challenge. You identify something that you would like to change. That might be, I want to grow more annual vegetables. It might be, I want to reduce the amount of effort involved in tending my chickens. The second step is to consider all the realistic options for that challenge. The third step is to then put the best option from those that you've chosen into action. And the fourth is to see what happens, observe the results of that change. The fifth is to then think about what's happened, think about what we've learnt, And then the sixth is to start all over again and basically restate that problem, but now from a new place, a place of more knowledge, because you've gone through one iteration, if you like, of these changes. And through this, we can see that observation is key. Now, if we're going to be doing this, then one tool that I recommend is to actually get a piece of paper and write down on that piece of paper lots and lots of categories that you're going to want to fill out. So they might be things like soil. And under that category, you might put, you know, what type of pH is my soil? Does it drain? Is it clay? Is it alkaline? The next one is what's working. Now, when you sit down and observe an area and decide what's working, then you're going to be looking at all the things that nature's already doing. So perhaps it could be something as simple as the ground's draining nicely. Perhaps it could be this ground is capturing lots of sunlight. Perhaps it could be there is a thriving monoculture of weeds and other plants here, and, you know, list what they are. The next thing are to list the wildlife in the area. So, you know, do you think there might be frogs there? Are there, is there a habitat for frogs? Is there abundant insect life, bird life? What type of birds? The third one is to do with the climate, and you might list how much sun is this area getting? How much wind is it exposed to? How much of this area is in shade? Is there water in this area? Is there a stream that runs near this area? Something like that. And jotting that down. The next one would be extremes of weather. So if there is a drought or extended periods of heavy downfall, how would this area be affected? If there was high winds, how would this area be affected? The last one would be, not the last one, sorry, the penultimate one would be, what do I intend to do here? What are the ideas that I'd like to do here? What would I like to see change? Would I like to grow more of this? Would I like to encourage these species of animals? Would I like to give this and this area over to a flock of chickens or goats or whatever it might be? And then final one are, what is here that I would like to change? You know, what weeds are growing here that I don't want? What is the risks here in so far as what I want to achieve, what's going on here that I want to change? And if you are interested in doing something like that, I strongly recommend you go back and listen to that episode called a Lockdown Activity for Mental Health, I think it was called, where I go into this in a bit more detail. So it's really easy for you guys to get in touch. Whatever it is you want to say, whether it's an idea for a future episode or perhaps you've got some feedback on something you've heard me say, I really do love hearing from you. There's lots of ways that you can do it. Now, you can follow the links in the show notes. You can use your phone just by pressing the button in the link and record a voice message that can be played on the show. Alternatively, you can send us an email where we are selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com, or you can find us via Facebook. But however you choose to do it, I really do love hearing from you guys. Perhaps you'd like to record a voice memo using the regular recording app on your phone and send that via an email. That's another way that I can play it on the show. But please do get in touch. So, what are we really saying? Well, we know we've established that observation is key to permaculture. And I want to reiterate at this point that these 12 principles all work together. So just by learning one, it can be very, very helpful, but it's not necessarily going to give you the full picture. So it's not until we've spent some time with all of them that the idea of how we use them together is really going to crystallize. So we know that observation is key, and developing good observational skills is also essential if we're going to really make a well-designed and a well-functioning permaculture space. And although observation seems obvious, it's almost always the step that's actually left out of the equation when someone starts developing a garden. The idea that most people have is to plough straight in. And I certainly made this mistake and did a lot of things that perhaps I should have done slightly differently or in a slightly different place. I did take the time to observe, and I haven't made as many mistakes as I certainly would have if I hadn't done that. But The idea of really observing how the sun moves through a property, or the water moves and the wind moves, it relates to Bill Mollison's philosophy, again, of working with nature and not against it. And when you take the time to slow down and actually just simply watch and take in and observe a piece of land or what's happening with your flock of chickens or whatever it may be, it takes you time to reflect on what's happening and gives you information that can be really, really useful when you start to create more efficient spaces and more abundant designs and better use of bits of land that might otherwise have been missed or misused. So the classic thing that people say when they talk about observation in permaculture is that the ideal and what everyone aims for and what people will tell you that you should aim for, you know, really rigid permaculture should say that you should sit and just watch for a whole year before placing any permanent features, before planting a tree or doing any type of hardscaping or introducing buildings, because that year is invaluable, really, for giving you the time to observe microclimates and spotting things like frost pockets and areas that perhaps don't get the sun in the middle of winter, even though they're in full sun in the summer, and how things might impact on your neighbours and things like that. Now, of course, that's the goal, that's the ideal. It's not always possible, but if it is possible, then I do recommend that you take advantage of it and spend a whole year before you do anything really substantial. And every action that you do after that point, you want to make sure that it is a reaction to something that you're actually observing rather than just something that you want to achieve because you always wanted to achieve it. It's nicer if we can do it in a way that works harmoniously with the plot, because if you can do that, then the efforts are going to become far more effective, and the chances that you're going to find yourself down the line wanting to undo something that you've done are vastly diminished. So when I talk about observing, I think it really is important to just sit down with a bit of paper and a pen and a bit of peace and quiet and really go through these things and challenge yourself to really see them. Because I found, and I'm sure you'll find, that sometimes the things that you might assume are all wrong, and being forced to actually put it down on paper can really quite starkly change how we feel about a certain piece of space. So learning what's in front of you rather than what you believe to be there is super useful. And then once you have observed and you're actually starting to make changes, the observation doesn't end there. It's a perpetual cycle. It's a feedback loop that continues. We're constantly observing not only what's happening in nature all around us, but we're also observing the changes that we're making and the impact that they're having. And then we get to decide whether that is a positive change or whether we've actually made a mistake, or whether maybe perhaps our work here is done in this particular area. This is now a completed project. There's nothing else that we need to tamper with here. But it comes back again to another principle that I speak about all the time. And this isn't one of the permaculture principles. It's just a general principle that ties very nicely into permaculture, of just nudging. And we're not trying to rip out an entire ecosystem and replace it with a new one. But what we're trying to do is we're picking a goal, and that goal, in line with all of our permaculture principles, is to increase our outputs, basically, and reduce our inputs. The goal is to do less work, to buy less things that the garden needs, to be forced to introduce less fertilizers and things like that, and to, at the same time, increase the yield, increase the things that we're taking out, be it eggs, be it produce that we're going to eat, be it coppiced woodland, whatever it might be. And we're nudging, slowly nudging in that direction. And the beauty of nudging is that it allows us and forces us to work with nature, not against it. So I just want to take a moment and say thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate every single one of you who downloads and listens to the show. There's lots of ways that you can help the show grow and support it. And probably one of the best ones is just to share it with someone. Find someone who you think might be interested in this content and say, listen, here's a show that I like. I think you might like it too. And point them in our direction. We would be forever grateful. If you want to go a step further, you could also become a patron. You can do that by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub and set up to donate a small monthly amount. If you think this podcast is worth the price of a cup of coffee a month, then you can set it at that amount. And obviously, anyone who chooses to do that, we are eternally grateful to. So that is, in a nutshell, the first permaculture principle. And as the series develops, you will find that the other principles will be constantly referring back to the ones that we've already mentioned. And they do build on each other to give a really, really rich tapestry of a way of thought of how we can actually design our gardens. Now, permaculture is often, when you read about it online, a lot of the talking about it is about designing whole gardens. When you go on a permaculture course, generally, or a lot of them are called permaculture design courses, and they're all about designing gardens. So don't be put off, though, if you already have an established space. I'm a huge proponent of the idea that we can introduce permaculture principles at any stage. The idea of having a blank canvas or having somewhere that we know we're going to be for decades and that we can afford to kind of start from scratch and move towards this amazing ideal of having this idealized permaculture space at the end of it is fantastic, but we're not all in that position. But that shouldn't put you off, because the permaculture principles are ones that I think can apply to the smallest garden and even for smaller timescales. Now, obviously, the idea of observing and interacting is one that is based on a feedback loop that carries on for many, many seasons, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't pay to enact some of it, you know, straight away. And I think the idea of just sitting down in your garden and enjoying it while making some notes isn't a bad thing anyway, whatever you're going to do with them. So I do strongly encourage you all to do that. That's going to wrap it up for today. And as I've tried to make it clear that these principles are going to build on each other, so this episode is slightly shorter, but that won't be the case for all of them, and certainly not the ones towards the end of the series. They might get quite long, but for now, I think that's all we need to say about the first permaculture principle without starting to roll into some of the others. Thanks for listening, and I will speak to you guys soon. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.